This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
இன்பம் சேர்க்க மாட்டாய எமக்கின்பம் சேர்க்க மாட்டாய துன்பம் நீ.
Good afternoon, this is Front Runner Bigger Picture and I'm Lim Soon Hing. Carnatic music is one of the oldest systems of music in the world, and is supposedly much more complicated than the favorites crunched out by popular media these days. Notwithstanding its deep roots, the question is, how has it developed and adapted to the changing times and to manage to walk the fine line between being innovative and at the same time being traditional? Over the weekend, Oz Arun, a Carnatic musician known for his sonorous voice, will not only be performing at the Temple of Fine Arts, but will also be conducting a workshop for invited guests. Because he's not here today, we can chat with him. So we have Prakash Kandasamy, tabla player, and Hariram Lam, violin player. You both are going to be accompanying him, right? Are you both playing?
I'm accompanying him, tabla.
Yeah, and you'll be on the violin. No?
No. Probably I'll be there to watch him.
Watch him. Okay. Again, every time I bring you guys in, it's an opportunity for me to be educated. I assume what I don't know, a lot of people out there don't know too, you know. Yeah, I talked to some of the folks who have Indian ethnicity in them in our studio, and I asked them about Carnatic music. They look at me and they smile. It's just, I speak English. First, how different is Indian traditional music from other kinds of Indian music?
The thing is, I think all music in the world has three basic elements: sound, note, and rhythm. Indian music, because of the culture and the ancientness of the culture, has taken the note and developed another system called the raga, which is basically scales, which can create different kinds of moods. And they've taken the rhythm part and they've created something called tala, which is rhythmic cycle, cyclic rhythm, right? So these two elements are what makes Indian music or Carnatic music or Hindustani music different from any other kind of music, because you have these two elements which can actually help you prolong the enjoyment of the music, because the artist is having these two extra wings, as I would like to call.
When I was looking through some stuff, this is that Carnatic music is melody-based as opposed to harmony-based. Now, but you have added a couple of elements like the raga and the tala. But we'll come to that. So, does that mean that other cultures don't have harmony, other cultures don't have melody-based and harmony-based?
No, I think, actually, okay, my easiest comparison would of course be to Western music. In Western music, naturally, it's not like the song is in one key. There are a lot of changes. You know, it goes with the mood of the composer, and because of that, the orchestra that plays along creates so many different moods. And you know, whereas in Indian music, not to say that there is no harmony, but a lot of the songs, especially when they play in groups, is pretty much in unison. I don't really know why.
That was the question I was going to ask. Why?
Yeah. Of course, in today's music, a lot of innovative musicians, are like people like A.R. Rahman or Ilaiyaraja and all, who have adapted the Western elements into the Indian music, which is what you hear in today's film songs, actually. You know, they'll be using the basics of Carnatic music, but they have added harmony by using the guitar or an orchestra or piano, things like that. So, yeah.
Does that mean that traditionally in Carnatic music, when you have two voices, do you sing duets?
Yes.
And so if you have duets, both will be singing in unison also?
It depends. Okay, in a simple case of a Carnatic music concert where there is a main vocalist, There is an accompanist who is the violinist. And of course, you have the rhythm section, the mridangist and whoever else. Now, the role of the main artist, of course, is to sing the songs.
The melody.
The melody, the ragas, and so and so. Now, what the accompanist, which is the violinist, what he does is he tries to follow the main artist. That means whatever the main artist is singing, he tries to echo that. Now, the challenge for the accompanist is that he may or may not know the melody, but based on his understanding of what the raga is, he has to try and follow. So it's always a challenge for the accompanist. But then again, that's what makes the performance exciting for both the main artist and the accompanist.
Because and the audience.
And the audience. And even the percussionist also. Because a lot of Indian music is actually improvisational. I mean, yes, we do have our systems, our composed pieces and so. But a lot of it is based on how the musician feels. And yeah.
Does that mean then you play the violin, there may be somebody who's playing the flute, somebody playing the sarod. All of you are trying to follow the main singer, follow the main melody line, but each of you, depending on how familiar you are with it, you might be slightly different.
If in a case of an orchestra where we have notes, then definitely we'll be playing in unison. But if, let's just say, on one fine day there is a concert and then the main artist says, you know what, I want a sarod player, I want a violinist, I want a flutist, and they come and they do not know what's happening, then of course, you know, they try as much as possible to be the same. But
It's actually basically playing by ear.
You're
actually listening to the melody and you know the raga. Like, for instance, there are ragas which are pentatonic, which are only having five notes. There are ragas which are having six notes, and they're full ragas with seven notes going up and coming down. So as long as you've studied this on your own, in your study of your instrument, you've studied these ragas, you're put in a situation, you're given the same ingredients, but the main artist has got his ingredients in a composition. You don't know that composition. So you need to just following the same rules which he's following. Now, most of the time, a raga has got a way of going up, ascending, and a way of descending. There are certain points in which certain notes which you oscillate on more, certain points where you oscillate less. So these are all the qualities of the raga, the lakshanas of the raga, which all musicians will learn, whether you're a vocalist or an instrumentalist. Having learned this, now you will notice the composition will have the same elements as those qualities. The way the lines are composed, they will make sure that they stay on a certain note more. They make sure they move up in a certain way. Make sure they come down in a certain way. And then you are following the same. So basically, you are not that lost. But it's also exciting at the same time because you don't know what the artist is at that moment going to do.
Might decide to break the rule.
Yeah, he might.
You can.
You can break the rules as long as it's musical. You see, I think the rules are there as long to teach you how to follow a discipline. But they say that if you're a very good musician, you can break the rules because you are actually sticking to the spirit of music, that is to create beauty. So
yeah,
it's okay.
Now, with the roots of this music is in religion and in Hindu religion. Yes.
Yes, I would say okay. This is arguable. I believe I saw these questions a little earlier and I forgot to tell you about this, but actually I would like to say that actually there's a big difference between spirituality and religion, right?
True.
So I believe that music is spiritual, right?
But not religious.
And yes, they do have, like, for example, Carnatic music is very lyric based. Many of the composers were devotees of certain idols or certain deities in the Hindu pantheon. So yes, they composed for them. But in Hindustani music, in North Indian music, they perform ragas, which are not lyrics based. It's very little lyrics. It's more the raga themselves. They're using sounds like ah or oo, and they sing, or they play it on a sitar or an instrument. Now, what happens here is the practice of music, the attainment of these perfections in music, that is the technical ability, the theoretical ability, the practice itself is like a spiritual practice. And I think it goes for any music in the world. I think anywhere where there's virtuosity involved, where there's a deep connection with the instrument, whether you're a violinist of Yehudi Menuhin, or whether you are a guitarist or a drummer, there is a spiritual awakening inside the musician when he's practicing. And that spirituality is what touches everybody, I believe.
I can see that. I can see that. And I do believe that. But based on what my research says, that the Carnatic music has its roots in the religion.
No, definitely.
So, and you say, you kind of confess just now that the very fact that some of these compositions are dedicated to some of the pantheons of gods. Yeah. So, understanding the lyrics becomes to some
extent. Definitely, if you do understand the lyrics, they are, of course, more meaningful. The ragas are such a way, there are certain ragas which create different types of emotion. They are called nine emotions that are there, the Navarasas, in Indian music and dance and theatre. Navarasas are the nine different human sentiments which you feel. Help me out, Hari. So that you have love.
You have love, you have anger, you have courage, you have fear, you have laughter.
Disgust.
Humour, disgust. And you have
valor.
Yeah. And of course, finally, you have peace. Now, what this basically the musician tries to create is within these nine sentiments and the use of the raga, he tries to create all these emotions with that. So it's an added point when you know the lyrics of the song and you understand the meaning, because that way, when you understand something, you're able to add your own feeling into it within the means of the raga.
You see, like, for instance, ragas are vehicles of certain emotions. Certain ragas lend themselves to compassion. Certain ragas lend themselves to devotion. Certain ragas to valor. There are certain ragas for different emotions. The way the combination of notes are. But then again, this is also very much based on the society of that point where this thing started. So, of course, if I take the raga and say, this is devotional in India, you might listen to it and say, Sunheng, say, no, I don't feel that. I feel something else. Right? So it's always very acquired, this emotion, I feel.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of talk to you about how these things are all developing, and how something that's traditional is being used in contemporary life.
Yes.
And like you say, somebody's gone into music.
Yeah.
But first, so I'm talking to Prakash Kanasamy and Hariram Lam, both from the Temple of Fine Arts. Coming up, we'll talk more about how Carnatic music is evolving today, and also about Oz Arun, the Carnatic musician who will be here sometime tomorrow and then having this concert on Saturday. And there'll be a workshop for invited musicians. This is Front Row and a Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Yeah, tuned to Front Row and a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. With me in the studio are two Carnatic musicians from the Temple of Fine Arts, Prakash Kandasamy and Hariram Lam. One of them is participating in this concert on Saturday with O.S. Arun. I mispronounced it. I thought just Os, O.S. is Os. Now, we were talking about how this music is quite traditional. How has it evolved today?
Actually, Carnatic music, especially with time, actually, if you look at this, the world today, you know, probably hundreds of years back, the society that lived in a particular era was of a certain quality. And then over the years, with technology and with advancement and so and development, things have changed. Now everybody's dressed differently. Everybody speaks differently. And that's the way music is today, actually.
So music doesn't stay static.
No, it's never static. In fact, I have to share this. My guru's guru, the legendary Lal Guri Jayaraman, he's known all over the world as being such a virtuosic and graceful violinist. In fact, divine would be the best way to describe him. Now, and you know, he has passed on in the last 3 years, actually. And now his children are the torchbearers of the style. And I asked them this question, you know, I said, you know, how, what's it like, you know, with when people listen to you, don't they compare you to your father? And of course, the son, he said, my teacher, Lal Guri Krishnan, he said, we do face that almost all the time. And sometimes it's hard for us to come up with something new. But then again, we have to try because music cannot stay the same as it was 50 years ago. It'll become boring. Music has to develop. It has to change. So I guess in today's world, when we listen to especially Carnatic music, now a lot of people, I'll put that...
They are purists, who say you cannot change.
That's one. But to be honest, now, if I'll be honest here, a lot of Indians don't know what Carnatic music is. But
some of them work here, by the way.
But when they listen to a film song, they're able to at least appreciate the emotion or the sense within the song. They may not know what it is. But the truth is, a lot of the musicians who have created those songs actually do have Carnatic music or Hindustani music training. It's just that what they've done is they've adapted especially the Western elements and sort of fused it together with Indian music.
Sometimes successfully, sometimes not so successfully, but the attempt is there.
Yeah.
And I think that in a way is kind of sending Carnatic music to the future generation without their knowledge. It's like packaging something old in a new thing and just giving it to them and saying, hey... Yeah.
So what can be changed? What cannot be changed to say that, well, this is still Carnatic music or that it still has very strong elements of it?
I think classical music in Indian tradition is raga and tala music. Basically, that's what makes it different from any other kind of music. In India, you have folk music, which doesn't have to follow a raga, right, or a time cycle. Whereas in Carnatic music or Hindustani music, it is raga and tala. So as long as you are adhering to these two elements, or at least one of these elements, then the root is still there. The moment you remove that, for instance, a raga has five notes. Just say a raga is a pentatonic scale, and you say this is the scale, and then you introduce the sixth note, which is not supposed to be in the scale, then automatically you are going against the raga, yes. Right? But in film music, that happens a lot.
Yes.
You hear one line in one raga, and the next line will have the same, but another note there inside.
Yeah.
And then you say, hey, that was... No, it's not. But they never ever said that we are doing classical music.
Yeah.
They never said that. So they're not breaking any rules. But they're using the beauty of the Carnatic music in the film song.
Yeah.
But in Carnatic music, if you're going to say this is purely classical, then this element has to be there. And you will see it, even if it's just one line in a film song, you will see that element... And then it's taken away from you. But you know this person has trained in this. That's why it's there.
The other thing you talk about is the tala.
Yes.
Now, and you were showing me something about how the singer
cycle
would clap. Yeah.
Okay, basically, you see, a cycle is abstract, right? You cannot see it. So in order for the musician to know where they are moving in the cycle, because in Indian music, why we have the cycle is, again, coming back to the fact that everything, when we improvise, has to come back to the first beat of that cycle. So where is that first beat? How do we know 8 beats, right? It's like every day, a week is a cycle. If every day is called Sunday, you'll never know the first day of the week. So the same way in music, you need to show, you know, the cycle as in 1, 2. So the first is a clap and then 3 small fingers for an 8-beat cycle. 1 small finger, ring finger, middle finger, clap again, turn, clap, and turn, and then back to 1. So the moment someone sees you clapping and turning, they know you are on the second half of the cycle, which means they have to wind up their idea and come back to 1.
Yeah.
Right? So this is basically a visual cue. This is used if a vocalist is there and he's singing and he can clap. And so if someone is playing violin solo, then there's another person sitting there, usually to put the cycle, to show the cycle... independent.
For whose benefit? For
this
the audience?
This benefit is mainly for the audience and, of course, for the companies as well, for them to know where they are in the cycle.
Why is it important for the audience?
Well, because... Okay, Hari.
Yeah. Actually, see, the audience that comes to listen to a program as such... Okay, let's put it this way. Those who do not understand what's happening, yeah? When they come and when they try as much as possible to listen and to understand what's happening... Now... they've got no head or toe of what's happening. But then when they see the person putting the talam, they might be thinking, oh, eh, when they realize it's going on at a particular cycle, then they know, eh, this is what they're trying to do. Ah, okay, so now the percussionist or the musician is trying to improvise and finish at the given point.
But I guess to appreciate this part of the music, you have to have a little bit of study. Yeah, a little bit of study, because that is a cerebral part of the music. But there's a sensory part of the music which you don't have to know anything about. Your senses are just going to inform you. And there's also the emotional part of the music, which, as you asked me earlier, Sunheng, if you don't know the lyrics, how do you follow this? I'll give you the example again, and I think you gave me a good example as well. You were saying you were listening to, what was it?
Kamina Burana.
Yeah, Kamina Burana, and you said you had tears in your eyes. You never understood the words.
Yeah.
So I think music actually transcends, really good music should transcend lyrics. The lyrics are there. I look at it the other way around. The lyrics are there as a vehicle for the melody and the rhythm to touch the audience.
Yeah.
I look at it that way. Some people may disagree, that's fine. But, you know.
Now with OS Arun coming, are you all going to be playing your music from a score, or is this improvisation going to be happening with him?
It's going to be improvised.
So there's no score.
No score. Okay, to be honest, I'm supposed to meet up with him tomorrow. We're supposed to sit down together and do a little practice. I'm not the main percussionist. The main percussionist is a mridangam player. See, the concert is divided, I think, into two sections where he would be singing Carnatic music, pure Carnatic music, which instruments include violin, though it's a Western instrument, and then mridangam, and I think another percussion is there.
Yeah.
And tabla is actually a Hindustani music. It's from North India, right? North Indian classical music. And he actually is also very famous for singing bhajans, which are devotional songs originating from North India, and abhangs, which are actually Maharashtrian religious songs. And he's actually very famous for this because he was actually brought up in Delhi and he had a lot of influence of the Northern Indian music. So this is why I'll be accompanying for those that segment mainly. So I need to sit down with him just for a few times.
Are the musicians coming with him?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and how many local musicians are participating with him?
I'm the only one. Yeah.
Now, with him singing, and you know, you are talking to him, will there be also like a dance accompanying? Because based on my understanding, he's a composer.
Yes.
He also sings when somebody else dances.
Yes.
I think not too long ago, in 2013, he was here.
Yes.
And Mavin Koo danced.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, Hari played for that.
Ah.
Hari played violin there. And in fact, he's actually got it's a strong point of his to sing for dance. Now, the thing is, in dance music, where there's a lot of expression and where there's a lot of storytelling, one line of a song will be repeated many times. And unless the musician is going to be watching the dance and getting involved with the dance and actually trying to emote for the dancer through his voice, it's going to be falling flat because the audience is going to be hearing the same line again and again and again and again.
Huh.
But he has got this unique talent and his unique speciality where he can actually... He's basically singing for the dancer. Like, it's almost like the dancer is singing, you know, because he feels every line so well. And the beauty of it is that, so when they know OS Arun is singing for a dancer, wow, we have to go and watch this.
I mean, it sounds very complicated because, like you said, you know, the musicians follow the singer. Now the singer has to sing in such a way that he is, like you say, emoting for the dancer. So everybody is watching everybody.
Yes.
And
everybody has to be alert.
Alert and alive. You know, it's like you're on your toes.
Well, yesterday I had this jazz musician.
Yeah.
And I said, what is it you are trying to do when you are improvising? He says, the key thing about playing music is that, and when you don't have a score, like you said, you have to be in the moment.
Exactly.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes. Yes.
That's exactly what it is.
Yes.
And you practice and practice and practice so that you don't have to think at that point, but everything's falling in place. So you practice really hard so that at that point, you call this technique, it comes. You call this note, it comes. It doesn't fight you. Your body doesn't fight you.
Actually, one thing I would say is that in improvisation, what happens is there are a lot of mistakes that are bound to happen, but if you can improvise with those mistakes, that makes you a good musician as well. So, you know, that's
So, will O.S. Arun be singing his own compositions also? Or are these all the very traditional Carnatic?
Actually, I'm not sure. Be honest about it. But whatever he's singing, I'm sure it's beautiful because he has this capability, you know. Yeah. He's a fantastic performer.
I mean, he's known for his voice, I understand.
He's known for his voice, yes.
And for his ability to kind of be very, let's say, very, bring the emotions
yes,
to it.
Yes, it's actually... he's come from a family of great musicians. His father was a musician, O.S. Tyagarajan, and his brother, O.S. Sridhar, late O.S. Sridhar, was also a great singer. He has also been in Malaysia in the year 2000, and it's just a rich family musically.
Yeah. So the concert is Saturday?
Saturday.
What time?
6:30.
6:30, and it's over at the Temple of Fine Arts. Now, how can people get tickets?
You can get it at the Temple of Fine Arts, and it's on
just
a
go
pay.
There?
Yeah.
Go there.
Go there, and you can get it, and it's on a pay-as-you-wish basis. That means there's no price on the ticket. We accept any kind of donation for the performance.
Well, thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Prakash
thank
you. Kandasamy and Hariram Lam, both from the Temple of Fine Arts. So, O.S. Arun, the concert is Saturday at 6:30. And that's at phone number too, 03-2274-3709 if you want to obtain passes. This is Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.